This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027.
Well, it's time for our midweek SME panel sponsored by Yellow Pages. Don't search, find. And we've reached the midway point in the focus on SMEs, the entrepreneurs, the hustlers, the risk takers and risk analyzers, I might add, the breadwinners and job creators of South Africa. Just to recap briefly, on Monday night, we got the ball rolling with late payments. And there are some proposals on the table which were introduced by the DA to create the SME Ombud, which will help SMEs with access to a cost-effective mechanism for redress when government or big business doesn't actually stick to its end of the agreed contractual payment terms. Last night, we heard the very inspirational stories of two women who are kicking butt and taking names in the oil and gas sector, and they shared some of their valuable lessons that they've learned along the way. It's all about SMEs on the panel, sponsored by Yellow Pages. Yellow Pages has a range of digital marketing solutions to help you grow your business. Yellow Pages, don't search, find.
Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 1027.
So tonight we're going to zoom all the way into the small and micro enterprises, the S and the M in the SMME. And I suppose hustling in this space can be a bit sadomasochistic as well if you chat to a lot of these small businesses. And financial inclusion is a big part of this. We see financial inclusion in sub-Saharan Africa has increased dramatically over the past decade. Probably one of the biggest success stories. We've seen it grow from 23% in 2011 to 43% in 2017. That's not even in the last decades. That's just the last 6 or 7 years. And that's according to the data that I've seen from the World Bank FinDex survey, which was published last month. Sub-Saharan Africa is the only region where the share of adults with a mobile money account exceeds 10%. And that presents a big opportunity. And there's an emerging body of evidence on the impact that digital financial inclusion can have on inclusive economic growth and development. There was a study in the same report showing that smallholder cocoa farmers in Cote d'Ivoire, for example, who saved regularly, were better able to feed their families than those who didn't save, irrespective of the farmer's annual income. But the kicker comes in that these farmers were being serviced by digital agent banking and digital services, and this was leading them to save. I think there's no rocket science in the fact that those who save are better off, but it's the fact that these digital services are now allowing greater financial inclusion. But it isn't all just digital. It's about financial service providers starting to understand the needs of the micro and small businesses better. The township liquor trader, for example, the small-scale farmer, the cheese and yama. So what is microfinance? How does it relate to financial inclusion? What is the role of government in all of this? What is the role of business to ensure that these small and micro businesses can access credit, be it working capital or even growth funding, and that we can really support them as we look to grow the South African economy? Well, let's introduce tonight's guest around the table, starting with Bezant Chongo, a regional manager, Southern and East Africa at Positive Planet. And Bezant, I'll let you explain exactly what it is that Positive Planet does. Good evening.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be on the show. Yeah, so Positive Planet is an international development organization that works primarily in supporting financial service providers, regulators, and trying to see how we can increase access to financial services, primarily for the low-income market segment. So the micro-entrepreneurs that you're referring to, the small businesses, the individual. We find that formal financial institutions, banks in particular, struggle to address and serve this low-income market segment. So Positive Planet, over the last 20 years, we've really cut our teeth, primarily in other countries in sub-Saharan Africa, trying to see how we can increase access to financial services. We've set up microfinance institutions in Madagascar, Nigeria. So in the recent years, when we've been providing technical assistance and capacity building to financial service providers, it's really based on experience that we've had, getting our hands dirty, setting up microfinance institutions in other countries. And these learnings have been very cardinal in the work that we've been doing in South Africa in the last 10 years.
And why I'm looking forward to hearing you share some of those learnings on how we can increase access to financial services for our micro entrepreneurs. Robin Irwin is our next guest, a consultant for FinFine, which is quite an innovative online access to finance solution. So it's not a bank, but it bridges people. It brings together the providers and the seekers of SME finance with a focus on financial readiness. Robin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
Now, Bezan, I want you to kick us off here. From your experience in Madagascar, in Nigeria, from years of studying what the challenges are for these micro enterprises, I'm sure the banks would say, or the established financial institutions would say, we just don't understand this market. Very often they don't have a credit history, they don't have a track record, and therefore we just find it too risky to lend into this market. Is that the approach?
It's true that at first glance, it would seem as if this is a very difficult market to serve. The absence of records, the absence of information on which the credit decision would be made. What we've found in our work, and I think which has made a difference in markets where microfinance has been successful, when you're trying to serve the small migrant entrepreneur, it's to understand that probably you cannot separate the individual, the household, from the business. So if you go into a small business as a bank trying to understand the performance of the business by looking at its financial records, those records would not exist. So the work that we've done, and we think it's really what could be defined as best practice in terms of microfinance and lending to migrant entrepreneurs, is more of a cash flow based assessment of the micro entrepreneur, which takes into account not only the household but the small business, you know, that they're involved in. A key concept that's involved, for instance, in that concept is that when you talk about lending to a small business, we talk about the capacity to pay and the willingness to repay. So yes, the financial data will tell you about the performance, but what of the character? What of the micro entrepreneur, the individual? What is their perception in terms of their obligation towards paying? So it's these nuance that we get into, and which is really the cornerstone of the work that we do as Positive Planet, you know, and trying to build that capacity of financial institutions and, you know, breaking the mold from how the way that we go about assessing small businesses.
I love the fact that you touched on the attitudes towards repayment, because in South Africa we have such a well-developed culture of contributing to stock funds. So we often see that perhaps paying a clothing account might come second that month, but the stock fund is always paid. So we don't. It's incorrect to say we don't have a savings culture or a culture of non-payment. Mm-hmm. It's about understanding the attitudes to that payment and how they are integrated inside communities, and that can then inform your lending decisions. So I'd like to circle back to that. Robin, from your perspective at FinFind, what are you finding as some of the challenges for the smaller businesses, perhaps not as micro as the township liquor trader, but the smaller businesses to accessing credit?
I think one of the biggest problems is a lack of knowledge of how business finance works. So you do find a lot of small businesses approach institutions that actually will never fund them, simply because they're unaware of the options that exist. So that's number one. The very high cost to them of actually finding out who's out there, who offers what, because invariably that involves lots of time, lots of travel, and that's lost money effectively. But one of the biggest gaps that we are seeing is small businesses either just about to start or have already started needing finance for equipment. That's a big factor. That it's not the only need that they have, but obviously that equipment would enable them to get their business running better. And again, it is quite sector specific. For example, if you're in the construction industry, obviously you're going to need equipment far more so than somebody in a services area. So there are a lot of challenges that face them. And then coupled with that is a lack of access to collateral, and very often, much like has already been discussed, a lack of record keeping. So even though the business itself is actually able to support a couple of people, it doesn't have the records needed to prove its trading history.
Now, financial inclusion plays a big role for me in this business, and in the record keeping area. If we can start moving small merchants into the digital ecosystem, we can start building up a set of let's call it management accounts, through their transacting history. We still see most of the transactions in the informal economy, the micro economy, are done cash, on a cash-to-cash basis, be it business-to-business or business-to-consumer. So this seems to me to be a big challenge if we're to start getting a better understanding from a credit history perspective of what this micro enterprise represents from a risk perspective.
Yeah, you're very right, and I think Robin is correct in saying that, you know, the record keeping is an issue. But we could say that we could try to build the capacity of these small businesses to begin keeping more accurate records, but probably that's a tall order. I think where the industry is moving, and this is definitely the case in other countries, is to try to see what are the different proxies or different data sets that, you know, you can use to try to understand the financial performance, whether it's the assets, the cash flow of these businesses. A case in point is you talked about the small liquor store, the Spaza. As a potential financial credit provider, is you'd want to look at where are they sourcing their inventory, for instance. You'll be able to get a better understanding that most of the inventory that they're sourcing might be on an account. So we find that if you're able to look at these alternative data points and saying, are they also providing credit to some of their clients? Are these clients that belonging to Stockvilles? So you begin to look at different data points which we can help you understand what the actual financial performance and cash flow of the small businesses is. We could say that we'll provide capacity building, but I think the role that technology is playing is it allows you to be able to use innovation to collect different data points to understand how the small business performs. I refer to the fact that probably you'll not be able to separate the micro entrepreneur from their small business. In many markets that we operate in, for instance, just the phone records of a small business are a key indicator on how you can begin to understand how the small business operates. Where are they on a Monday morning based on the GPS location when they're supposed to be probably replenishing their inventory? What sort of calls do they seem to be making on what time of the day? So behind microfinance in markets where this is happening successfully, there's a lot of big data and how innovation can be used to understand the operations of a small business better.
That is fascinating. We had today an interesting fundraising announcement from Cofina, which works in the space in the rest of Africa, obviously showing that funders are alive to how successful some of these MFIs, as they're known, microfinance institutions, are being in supporting this market. And to use that example, Benzon, that you used, you've got your township liquor trader probably needing to access working capital for a week. So on a Monday, going out buying stock, selling it primarily into the weekend, and then repaying that loan by the following Monday. So that's the kind of typical scenario that we're looking at here. But allied to this is capacity building. And the fact that we need to help that same trader build a pool of working capital stock to better manage their business without the need to continually access credit all the time.
True, and that's where probably then a limitation that we find in the South African market, as you're saying, when you talk about access to finance, it's not only the credit, but the fact that they are probably going to require a fuller range of services. Is it a transactional account? Instead of operating in cash, can they have a point of sale? So that this is information which then provides a richer source of data for a potential credit provider. So the capacity is not so much necessarily around providing training, but probably providing additional infrastructure that allows the small business to operate more efficiently. Beyond, I think, the capacity of the business itself, an area that our work has focused on over the last couple of years is really building capacity of the financial service provider themselves. South Africa is unique that when we talk about microfinance in South Africa, we're actually mainly talking about access to finance for somebody who's got a payslip, whereas microfinance anywhere in the world is talking about really financing small businesses, informal businesses. So we've embarked on a program over the last year or two with the support of Banksita and the Wits Business School to actually develop an executive development program targeting microfinance institutions in South Africa and exposing them to business models in other parts of Africa. Later on this month, we'll be going to Ghana, Tanzania, and later in the year to Brazil to be exposed to alternative models.
That is fascinating. What has the MFI experience with SME portfolios been in South Africa? Because globally, you look at it, a number of MFIs offer services to their SMEs, and the performance performance of SME portfolios has been varied, as have the approaches used in serving these clients. So what has the experience been, and what sort of underwriting and risk management tools have been successful?
The portfolio seems to be skewed towards, when you talk about micro and small businesses, the higher end. This is the institutions which will be more formalized, hence would have the financial records that we refer to that are cardinal. Another segment of the industry, the SME industry, which you'd say I think has been more successful, is where the business is more integrated into a formalized value chain, where the source of inventory, where the clients are far more better defined. So it's easier to understand exactly what the cash inflows, the cash outflows are. So they're really the segments of SME finance which have been far more successful are the ones which, you know, which are targeted more formalized market segments or micro franchise, right, for instance.
So it's still it's very underdeveloped in South Africa then by global standards.
It is. We in our industry we refer to South Africa as actually having a missing middle. You've got this sophisticated banking sector, but when it comes to the micro and SME finance, this sector remains significantly underdeveloped, and we've got a lot to learn from the rest of Africa.
And to me, that's such a key challenge, because we look at the 40 by 40 by 40 challenge, the fact that most people live 40 kilometers or more away from their place of work, spend 40% of their income on transport and live in 40 by 40 square meter shacks, yep, means we need to bring those economic opportunities closer to where they live. And in order to do that, we need to be able to understand those markets and be able to lend into those markets. Robin,
exactly.
What are we doing from your perspective to really understand this this market and to unlock this particular challenge?
I think what's really important to understand is the role of fintechs in helping address this problem. And obviously, you can only collect alternative data sets over time. So FinFind itself starts with an access to finance matching system whereby we ask an entrepreneur various questions about them and their business and their financial needs. And we have built a comprehensive database of funders and funding products and matched those. So we are able to very quickly, electronically, match them to appropriate funds. On the other hand, comes the learning side. But obviously, during this process, we're building data sets. So FinFind will very shortly launch its inaugural access to finance report. And it has enabled us, I mean, it's based on, it's a very large data sample that we have, or it's not a sample, it's actually our data set. And it's growing at a rate all the time. So I believe FinTech are in a position to start identifying what actually does this market want and to make people aware that the SME market is not a homogenous market. It's split into various stages depending on the turnover, the size of the business, and the financial needs, whilst they might be couched in similar terms, actually are different. Mm-hmm. The amounts needed are different, the time repayments, the risk factors, which has already been really quite well addressed, are different. And as a result, it hopefully reports like this will enable finance institutions and government decision makers to start addressing this bottom of the pyramid need. It's a massive need, and it's not been addressed. Neither is it being appropriately addressed.
Absolutely, and research is key to this. I know that the IFC is working quite closely with several role players in South Africa in developing deeper insights, and it's great to hear that you're doing that as well, Robin, with your data. Bizant, in conclusion here, when we look at this, there's also a fantastic opportunity for microfinance institutions, because a number of, shall we call them, veteran clients of MFIs migrate. They don't stay micro enterprises forever. They become small and perhaps even over time, medium-sized businesses with higher turnover, more employees. So there's a huge opportunity for those MFIs that understand this market to get in, unlock growth for themselves as well.
Great. That's true. There's really room for innovation for leading microfinance institutions to grow with their clients. That would mean they would need to provide probably a more sophisticated range of products. But that said, I think I would need to say that probably one limitation then is the regulatory environment, which only allows our microfinance institutions in South Africa to provide mono products or credit products only. So this really does not allow the SMEs to grow with the microfinance institutions. Probably an area for more discussion, and I think the regulatory environment is one which can help enhance the situation.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we do have for, so no time to branch off into that particular discussion. Thank you very much, Bazan Chongo, Regional Manager for Southern and East Africa at Positive Planet, and Robin Irwin, a consultant for FinFind, with some very thought-provoking ideas on how to improve access to funding for the micro businesses, the true hustlers, from the taverns to the township tourist operators, who could really grow into tomorrow's small and even medium-sized businesses with a bit of the right support and the right access to funding. And that's a wrap for our midweek panel, brought to you by Yellow Pages. And remember, just a little inspirational quote, because we're talking SMEs all this week, that success is not the key to happiness. Happiness is the key to success. If you love what you're doing, you're going to be successful.